Blog Talk Radio.
It is that time of the week once again. It is time for the Two Guys Soccer Show. I am Mike, he is Stead, and we are ready to go. Once again, we are brought to you this evening by the fine folks down at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and live music. Go down and check them out, and we thank them once again for keeping us on the airwaves tonight. There's a lot to get to, so let's get to it. Mr. Stead, how are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Happy to be back on the horn.
You know what? I thought with an international week, we might not have a lot to talk about, and I was planning on taking a week off and figuring, hey, I can just mail this in. Yeah, I was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we got plenty to get to tonight, so let's get it rolling. As we do each and every week, we're going to get it started with the good, the bad, and the ugly of the week that was before the week that was. Yeah. All right, Stead, hit me.
All right. My good this week is these last couple of fixtures we have for MLS. You look in the Eastern Conference, you basically have three teams for two positions. And DC United is in the driver's seat. But as we saw, Montreal bounced back really well after their loss last week. And they have two games against some pretty quality opponents of playing against Toronto coming up this weekend, and then they're going to close out the season with a game against New England. Now, New England's a team that has just been eliminated from playoffs, but, of course, can still look to play spoiler. Columbus Crew looks pretty firm. If they get one win, they should be good to go. So, but then we also have over in the Western Conference, you still have LA Galaxy smelling around in seventh place, and it's a little bit more open over there where you have really, with Portland at 51, Portland can skin their knee and risk missing the playoffs. And Seattle and Real Salt Lake are hanging on to the fifth and sixth spots, where you have LA Galaxy with 1 point behind. Seattle Sounders look like they're probably going to lock this up because they have one game in hand and they're only 1 point behind the Timbers. So if they can stay the course, then they can definitely maintain. And they also have one more win than Portland does. So this is going to be exciting to watch these last 2 weeks. And, of course, I'm glad of the fact that DC United – has that extra game in hand because they have three games, but they do have to play their final game on the road, and they have the absolute worst record on the road this year in the MLS. So hopefully they can get over the hump against Chicago and really finish out strong. I feel like if they win 2 of 3, they should go ahead and hang on to that sixth spot.
I think 2 of 3 for DC gets them into the playoffs. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, they have to go on the road,
mm-hmm.
and they have been the worst road team.
Yeah, they've been dreadful.
Excuse me. These games are going to start coming up thick and fast. They've got
yep.
Wednesday. They've got Toronto. Now, Toronto, mm-hmm. disappointing season, out of the playoffs, but still some quality there with Giovinco and Michael Bradley. They've got to get NYCFC, who needs to get it together on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the final week of the season, and they're on the road at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Never an interesting – always an interesting place.
Yeah, and Chicago is – yes, they've struggled this year. 8 wins total this season. But we just noticed about, I guess, maybe 2 days ago, the temperature suddenly dropped 10
yes.
to 15 degrees on average. And it's been quite comfortable. It's been rather rainy in D.C., but we haven't had a hot summer. And now they're going to have to go over to play in Chicago, where if anybody's ever been to Chicago after September knows, that wind coming off the lake is brutal. So hopefully DC can overlook that. I mean, I think the only person that's really going to be comfortable in that weather is Wayne Rooney and be able to shake that off and go ahead and put on a good performance.
So I want to give you my good from the MLS this week, and that didn't come on the field, but rather in the front office. the Haslam family and the Edwards family have launched a bid to buy the Columbus Crew. According to state law, any team in Ohio that wants to relocate has to give an opportunity for local investors to buy the team. It looks like this investment may come about, and we may have finally saved the Crew. One of the original MLS teams looks more than likely now that they will stay where they belong in Columbus. So good on Columbus, probably not so great on Cincinnati, although that rivalry is really going to be interesting.
But, yeah, it's good for them too because, you know, I know Austin's kind of hurting for some sort of professional sports team right now, but it shouldn't be Columbus. I think Austin should wait for an expansion club.
Well, that is in the deal, is that Anthony Precourt has the opportunity to buy into the league and put the team in Austin. That will really negatively affect any expansion hopes for San Antonio.
True.
But it looks like there are going to be three teams in Texas. I am a little bit surprised that there are going to be three teams in between Nashville, Columbus, and two in Ohio. But it looks like that's the direction that MLS is going to head in. And I am happy to see the Crew stay in Columbus, one of the original MLS teams. And I think it would have set a bad precedent for the league to move one of those teams from that community that has supported it faithfully.
Absolutely.
Through
Absolutely.
Really rough times. So
right.
Happy to, that the Save the Crew movement is able to keep on keeping on and may look to even be successful.
Right. A lot of those original MLS teams, too, quite a few of them had to fold early on and halfway through the campaigns and stuff as far as when you look at the longevity of the league. So the teams that have hung on, especially a team from a smaller market, you really want to try to hang on with those teams. And they do have a very, very loyal fan base. And they were one of the early teams to actually get a soccer-specific stadium. So you really want them to stay there. I mean, it's different from a team like the New England Revolution, who is an original team, but they're still playing in Foxborough. And so it would be nice to see. I mean, it's going to be nice to see. I really hope they're able to keep that team there. That's kind of a, that's like a destination game. Like maybe we should get in the car one day and drive up there and catch a game. I think that would be fun.
You know, we should look at it. What? It's only about 8-9 hours. We could do
it. No, it's not that bad. You know, you can get to Columbus in about 6. It'd be good. No problem.
Oh, I was thinking. I'm used to thinking from New Jersey, not from here. But that all works. So I want to give you my good for the week. We talked about them a little bit last week. We got to talk about the U.S. women. Qualified for the World Cup after beating Jamaica this past weekend, 6-0.
6-0.
6-0. So right now, through 4 games in the tournament, they have outscored their opponents 24-0. Going back through 6 games in 2015, they had outscored teams 21-0. They are hitting on all cylinders right now. And I think they are playing just about the best that I've seen them play in this cycle. Jill Ellis has the team peaking at the right time. She's made some really interesting moves. Noticeably absent from the starting lineup recently has been one Carly Lloyd.
Right.
What does it mean when you can put the former FIFA Women's Player of the Year, 2-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year, on the bench?
Well, it also shows you that when you look at the squad, she's got a young squad out there. And
she's very young squad.
Yeah, but you're seeing how the development of women's soccer, how it's always been dominant in comparison to the rest of the world. But because of the popularity of the sport growing from a spectator's perspective, that you're still getting a lot more young athletes. And I'm happy to see, you know, a lot more diversity on the team. I mean, that team really was, you know, mostly your, you know, the typical soccer player that we saw in the United States in the late 90s, to a team that's much more reflective of the country, which is also really positive to see for the U.S. women's team.
And they've got some good young players. I'm really liking Rose Lavelle. I was really interested to see how Julie Ertz would take to playing in the midfield. She got a goal against Jamaica, so she's adapting well to that more holding midfielder's role from having played center back in the 2015 Women's World Cup. You know, as long as you've got Alex Morgan in front of goal, she's going to put him in for
you. She's going to put him in, yeah.
despite all the controversy, Megan Rapinoe has now taken the captain's armband, and she's running stuff down the wing. You got some really great young players that have just moved on, and Jill Ellis has really taken advantage of this 4-year cycle to create a new team, a new style of play, one that I feel is much more suited for how teams are going to play them. They are much more attacking oriented. They look to exploit space and score early and prevent teams from bunkering in to try and avoid the problems that they faced against Sweden in 2016, when they really just struggled to play against teams that were going to be defensive against them. You see them, they're much more able to move the ball. They move it quicker. They're willing to take shots from the outside and convert those opportunities. They're much more effective as an offensive force and getting on the front foot, staying on the front foot and preventing teams from just bunkering down, parking the bus and waiting behind the ball with 11 people and hoping that they can prevent the team from scoring and then capitalize on a mistake.
Right. Well, it's going to be interesting, the game tomorrow, because I feel like the Canada game is probably going to be their only real test in CONCACAF. And Canada is, they're relatively new on the world stage as being a dominant team. And you got to remember, Canada has a very long history of strong performances in track and field. So they have athletes up there that are built to play soccer. So hopefully that game will give the U.S. some real run, because I think they need some. It's their most recent games have all been blowouts. They haven't had a game closer than 3-0 since June 12th against China. So they need to play against some competition and really kind of get tested out there. Even though I doubt that Canada is going to really put too much pressure on the United States, but you got to play somebody. You can't just keep beating up on the minnows all the time.
Well, tomorrow's game against Canada represents the last competitive fixture that they're going to play against a top 10 women's team until the Women's World Cup. Canada's checking in at 5 in the world right now. That tells you how much they've come, into their own in the last 4 years.
Right.
While we would expect a U.S. women's victory, I'm going to call 2-0 right now. But this is going to be the type of game that they're going to play when they get into the World Cup, because then they're going to have to go through the Englands, the Frances, and the Germanies, who are currently 2, 3, and 4. So you spoke about that win against China. China's top 10 women's World Cup, women's ranked team. And that was for them. And this is probably the most significant test that the women have faced in a competitive match since they played China.
Right.
I still think that they've got the better of them. You know, China or Canada's coming in on the same pace that the U.S. women are. And I think that's going to be appointment viewing tomorrow. I may even tune out the inaugural games of the NBA season to watch women's soccer. And that's what we always wanted.
That's
something to tune in when it wasn't a World Cup.
Right.
To watch and women's soccer.
Yeah, and this is also good for the fan like me, who, while they may keep up with what is happenings of the Women's World Cup and of the women's soccer, women's national soccer team, I haven't watched too many matches. And but this will actually give me, this is a good match to tune in. And I really haven't watched the matches because I really felt they lacked a lot of competitiveness outside of specifically the World Cup. And I remember the U.S.-Japan game. I believe that was, close to eight years ago. But that was this good, skillful game where both teams came to play. And that's really what I enjoy watching.
So I want to get on to a bonus good from the men's game. England and Spain yesterday.
Yes.
The young Lions from England travel to Seville and defeat La Fiora Rojo 3-2, beating Spain in their first competitive match since 1987 and handing Spain their first loss on Spanish soil in 15 years.
Yeah, good for the young boys to get out there, really. I also liked how I felt like the Spanish defense is known for, especially their center backs, they're known for pushing people around and really dominating other players' attack and really shutting them down. And to see the England team give Spain a little taste of some of their own medicine with a really some hard play And also, I was really happy for Raheem Sterling to end his goal drought. He actually played, I thought he played admirably well in the World Cup. Of course, he didn't score specific goals, but he was creating a lot of havoc, and he's going to demand respect when he has the ball. So him just being a threat was enough to open up the field for a lot of the other England players to score. So good on Raheem Sterling. He was talking about how once I get back on, the goals are going to come. He was talking about that the day before this game. So good for get a goal. Good for England to get a win. Good to show that the World Cup was actually the start of a good, strong international campaign. You're setting yourselves up to really have a great, great, great qualifying campaign. Hopefully get in and get a good seat and get a good group for the next World Cup and really show that this young England team is actually a force to be reckoned with for quite a while.
One of the big issues coming out of the World Cup was who have England beat among the world elite?
Right.
And yes, they got the monkey off their back by winning the game in penalties. Mm-hmm. Yes, they got to the World Cup semifinals. But when it came up to playing the big guns,
mm-hmm.
in Belgium, you know, to Croatia to a certain extent,
right.
they were found lacking.
Right.
They got their signature win. This shows growth. Now, we have in the front line with the likes of Rashford and Sterling. We're going to run at you. And when you've got a team that has the likes of Raheem Sterling, Jesse Lingard, Dele Alli, and Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, you have
Harry Kane. Yep.
I wouldn't exactly call Harry Kane quick.
Not quick, but he can get down the field. He can definitely get down the field, and he can get down the field with power. And he has that run where, you know, Harry Kane's a big boy. I wouldn't want to stand in his way if he's coming down, if he's making that run. And his ability to put the ball in the net, him going with those horses that you just mentioned, is good because they're going to take a lot of pressure off from a speed perspective. And he can really make that straight run and just be set up and kind of trail even those lead runners and put the ball in the back of the net. That's really great to hear for England and good for England. They watching games with England fans is kind of hard because they always expect their team to lose. So it was fun to see them win a game against a good, strong team and show that they are, you know, because they had a pretty easy group for their qualifying. I don't think they had a really another strong team in their group for qualifying. So good for you, England. Hopefully now you can start really beating teams or even getting strong draws and not look like you are punching above your weight when you're playing against Germany and France and Belgium and Brazil and Argentina and the likes of those teams. So while we're on that, talking about Germany, that's going to be my bad for the week. Germany, it looks like the World Cup may not have been simply a fluke for Germany. They've lost now two games in the UEFA Nations League, and they're at risk of facing relegation. And they lost to France in a pretty close game with a late goal, but a loss is a loss. And, you know, Germany is not a team that loses. I believe Gary Lineker said, I'm probably going to screw this up, but soccer is an easy game. It's 11 on 11 and Germany always wins. And we're not really seeing that type of Germany anymore. We're seeing now a Germany that's come back to the pack with the other teams in Europe, and they're looking beatable. And I think it's safe to say that the controversy surrounding Mesut Ozil is might not be that unfounded, because he's very upset and that team may be struggling a little bit simply because of the drama going on in Germany. Not saying that they necessarily need Ozil, but the drama can't be positive, and it definitely takes the Federation's head elsewhere. They're having to deal with controversies surrounding claims of racism, and that's just difficult for any team to swallow, especially a team with a history of a country like Germany. And, you know, I don't say hopefully for Germany, because Germany has won so much, and I'm much more of a fan of kind of spreading the wealth a little bit when it comes to winners and losers. But hopefully they'll probably take a lull. They'll probably have a run of some difficult play in the next coming years. But again, they're Germany. I'm sure they have 27 young players right now that are itching to get a call up and itching to come in and play play for the big country. And I doubt Yogi Löw's job isn't in any way in jeopardy. I think that would be not a wise decision by Germany. Mikey back yet? All right. So I think we should pick up here and talk a bit about the U.S. game that we saw. Of course, U.S. is getting ready to play Peru right now. They are definitely still in the planning stages for what they're looking for. They hope their squad will look like in the upcoming. 9 changes have been made between just from the game against Colombia to this game against Peru. 9 changes is a lot of changes, and we're seeing a lot of young guys get starts, and we're seeing a lot of and I think only Kellen Acosta and Tim Weah are the only players who started the last game that are going to start this game. So good for Coach Dave to give these young guys an opportunity. Josh Sargent starting, and it would be good to see how they play against a team like Peru, which isn't, you know, they did qualify for the most recent World Cup, but they're not one of the historically strong teams from South America. Whereas a game against Colombia, which is a historically strong team, and they have actually beat up on the United States quite a bit since 94. So this will be a good showing. This will be a good game to watch tonight, especially if you want to check out what is really in the pipeline in U.S. soccer. A couple of issues that I noticed with the game was that it seems like this is another issue with U.S. soccer as a whole, as I just don't see players who are really comfortable with the ball at their feet for any sort of extended period of time. They still are playing the long ball, still playing the they're still playing the long ball. They're still playing that kick and run style. And against a team, once a team figures that out, especially a team with the central defense that Colombia has, you're not going to be successful for long. And I think the U.S. was actually pretty lucky to get 2 goals in that game. The first goal they received, first goal that they got was on when Colombia actually had to go down to 10 men periodically due to an injury. And the second goal, it just looked like their defense was out of sorts a bit. But it was exciting for a while. I felt really good to see them go up 2-1. And the players were humming. And especially after the end of the first half, I'd say the first 30 minutes of the game, the U.S. looked pretty comfortable. They got lucky a couple times as far as some missed opportunities by James Rodriguez and Radamel Falcao. But overall, I thought they looked pretty comfortable. And then once Colombia started to really just control the ball in their own offensive third and in the U.S.'s defensive third, it really started to look like they could run away with it. Hey, Mike, you back yet? Yeah, they really looked like they could run away with it. They put in, I think the U.S. was lucky to escape out of that half 1-0. Even at the end of the half, Colombia had more chances to get more goals, and they easily could have lost that game 5-6-2 easily. Another issue I noticed with that game was the U.S. attack. Now, I guess it's a little odd to talk to really have a lot of have any negativity about the attack when they were up 2-1, and then when they actually scored 2 goals, and they scored 2 goals in relatively quick succession for the United States. But again, while they were able to press the ball up the field, they were able to get a good counter. They didn't get many shots. They didn't test the goalkeeper that much. And their set pieces were really not executed very well. The corner kicks, a couple of penalties and stuff, it seemed like the ball was just kicking to the first defender, and then the Colombian team turned on the Jets to go for a counterattack. And while I liked the aggressiveness, the execution was just poor. And they just didn't seem to have the same foot skill. They don't seem to have the same first touch. They don't have the same ability to control the ball.
You're dealing with a highly skilled Colombian team.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think because of that, I felt like the U.S. should have tried more. You're playing against a strong Colombian team.
They tried everything that they had.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
I think they tried what they could. And that's when you got – a little bit of a football lesson. Look, James Rodriguez running at you, Juan Cuadrado running at you, these are elite players. If I am Mike Miazga, if I am Anthony Robinson, I'm going to that's enough to scare me. If I'm an experienced defender, that's enough to scare me. I thought that the result of the game was what I expected it to be. Mm-hmm. I thought that they made mistakes. I'm more concerned with how they learn from them and move forward. And right mm-hmm. now, to avoid giving away any spoilers, I'm seeing a more composed performance against Peru than I did at times against Colombia. You know, this is still a very, very young U.S. men's team, and there's still a lot of room to grow. And you're catching them on the front end of a cycle. So we can criticize them for the mistakes that they made, but the question is, do you make the same mistake twice, or do you learn from that one? Because there's so many more fun mistakes to make.
True. And overall, though, I mean, I know I sound critical. I was actually quite pleased.
I was happy with the game.
I was pleased. I think, though, that my criticism comes from really the individual players and their, I don't know, I sense this kind of, like, I don't want to make a mistake in a way. When I'm feeling like if there is a time to try something new, now's the time.
Well, I think that's their nature, is they don't want to make mistakes. Players don't want to make mistakes, but they're playing between two minds.
Yeah, this is a problem with the U.S. game in general. You know, we don't have enough kids that play in the street that just work on their little moves. You know, we don't have that. So the comfort with the ball at your feet isn't going to be the same when you're playing against kids who play in the street. And, you know, I've heard this for decades.
Their ability to handle the ball at their feet. You know, yes, they were not as good as Colombia. They are never going to play South American soccer.
They should try a little bit more, is what I'm saying. Give it a whirl.
I think that you're starting to see that. We are still a generation away. The guys that are going to lead us to a World Cup triumph are in grade school right now, if they're there. I'm seeing signs of improvement. I'm seeing talent and ways coming through the ranks. The likes of Tim Weah, the likes of Christian Pulisic, these are generational players, but they're 17 and 21.
Right.
And we need to give them – there are still a lot of holes. You know, as I'm watching this team right now, I'm seeing a lot of youth. I'm seeing a lot of potential. And I'm hoping that we just get the right guy in – coach to guide them there. And that's why I think we need to move in a different direction than Dave Sarakin, because I'm not sure that he has the capacity to train up these players like they need to be trained up. Right now, they're at a mental game. He needs to instill a style of play. He needs to – what are they learning and training that they don't get on a regular basis playing for the U.S. men's national team? That's my question.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this then. Does it appear that now – based on what both of us have seen, that is Dave Sarakin really just showcasing these players for the next coach to see what he has to work with and what he has to do, more so than actually coaching them up into being dominant world-class players?
I think that he is trying to do what he is able to do, which is to coach them up while he is there. He's trying to instill a style of play that suits what he wants to be doing. He is bringing in young players. He's giving them the chance. He's coaching them up while they're there. But he is limited in what he's going to do, and he's limited in his tenure. I don't expect that he is going to become Bob Bradley. All the signs that I have heard have said that it's going to be Greg Berhalter who's going to become the next U.S. men's national team coach.
Mm-hmm,
now, we can argue about that, because I think if that was going to be your choice, you could have made that last year in December and not wasted a year. But I admire the job that he has done in the position that he has been in. I think that he has shown that he's capable of being a manager. Now he is in his 60s. Whether or not you want to bring him in as a first-time, full-time manager at that age is up to you. But I appreciate what he has done. You know, I think that he has shown some good things. I also think he's shown some limitations.
Yeah.
My question is, like, can we get somebody in to guide this team forward? Because the one thing Dave Sarakin has showed us is there is talent. And it, right tutelage, there are players there that can be taught, that can be groomed, that can be formed into a team, a la what Gareth Southgate, what we were talking about, what Gareth Southgate is doing with England. Now, is there a level of that talent? No. But is there enough to get us in to be a serious competitive team? So.
But, the, I mean, these kids that are coming out here right now, and I am going to call them kids because, you know, of course, if, even if I was younger, I'd still call them kids because you're just looking at them and they look like babies to me. But I am very excited to see this, to see them play. I'm very excited to see them blossom over these next, you know, probably 8 years for a lot of them. And, you know, it's not out of the realm that they don't qualify for the next World Cup. That's a very strong possibility. And but to see them hopefully get a good squad where they have a, you know, right now it sounds there's probably one or two players that are in the U.S. system now that pretty much have their starting 11 spot locked up. That's probably it. And
I think there's a little more than that. I think solidly I can point to, off the top of just going through it, you got DeAndre Yedlin starting right back, Christian Pulisic starting.
Outside of those two,
Zach,
you know,
Steffen probably has emerged from all of this as your number one. I think that on his day, John Anthony Brooks is your starting center back, so that's four. Outside of that, maybe I'm getting. I really think that Weston McKennie has nailed down a spot in this team. Over Dave, and that may be the one thing that comes out of it is that. So I think you're starting to see. I don't think that Tim Weah has necessarily nailed down the spot.
Yeah, he's 18 though, and he's not Raheem Sterling. So
I think though that he's at least in the mix. Remember, Raheem Sterling was 19 when he became Raheem Sterling.
Right.
He was in his 20s when he nailed down a spot.
Right, but he started at 19 for the in that World Cup. He started their group games. So he in Brazil. But my point to make was, though, was that if you look at the players who have been called up in the past 12 months, there's a lot of players that have been called up. And that's what I really like to see. It's just this, there's so many players that are getting called up, which means that the pool is larger. And, you know, when we were younger, you knew basically the 13 players, 14 players that were going to play every game, every friendly. And occasionally, maybe a player like a Roy Lossiter would get a call up for a friendly. But you knew who the players were for a really long time. And I like the fact that the U.S. isn't constantly pulling, you know, we have a friendly coming up. We have to get these same guys all the time. You know, they have room for players to maybe – say, you know what, I'm feeling a little tight in the leg. I can't show up for this one. Or, you know, I got a rough travel back from my home country, and they may go, you know, you go ahead and stay for this round. We have it covered. And that's what the strong teams have. And that makes me – that excites me for what's up and coming for U.S. Because, again, we don't need – I think as Americans, for me as a soccer player too – I'm okay with us not being great at soccer. I'm fine with that. I really am. I just want to see the team grow, and I just want to see the team be competitive. That's all. That's all. Yeah. And eventually, if the U.S. continues, if they actually, you know, have a direction and they stick with it, they could possibly, you know, squeak into a quarterfinal or squeak into a semifinal at a World Cup. You've seen them final at a Confederations Cup. They've semifinaled relatively recently at a Copa America, and you know, they've beaten some big teams at Copa Americas, and I'd like them to be a team in the Americas that gets invited to that tournament often. And because I don't think they get invited enough, and I'd like to see that Copa America turn into a bigger tournament.
That's not a them thing. That's
I know. I know. But yeah, I know. But still, it can work is what I'm saying. You can make it work.
Yes.
And they can make it work. And schedule aside, just change the schedule. You can make it work.
Well, I going back on that one of the things I hate about that is, the U.S. doesn't want to play in the Copa America. Yeah, they do.
I got more of the sense that the U.S. wasn't invited very often to the Copa America.
They're not invited because they can't come because of the fact that the Gold Cup and the Copa America happen the same summer, and
right.
requirements require them to field an A team, and they you can't expect a team to play two tournaments in one summer.
No, of course. So you know.
But with
I don't know.
Copa America saying that they're going to switch to even years after this one, I think you'll see more.
You'll see the U.S. more, yeah. But
and
I would like to then, but see how the UEFA Nations League is setting up this kind of pool play where they're keeping the stronger teams playing against each other and giving kind of the smaller teams a chance so they can play each other so they can get more competitive games. You know, I just, nothing is set in stone, especially the Gold Cup hasn't even been around that long. And it's to make changes to that, to give the U.S. more opportunities to play against teams that are outside of the CONCACAF region where you're basically your good games are going to come against Peru, I'm sorry, not Peru. You're going to come against Costa Rica and Mexico, and then occasionally a Honduras side will be good. Occasionally, maybe a Guatemala. Sometimes a Jamaican side will be pretty good, but that's pretty much it. And to go down and play against teams where, you know, a game against a small CONMEBOL team like Venezuela or Peru is going to be still a strong game for the U.S. Yeah.
So,
well, we could talk about U.S. all
no,
you know,
night long.
Let's go ahead and keep it moving. Let's keep this moving. We got a lot more to talk about.
Before we do, I want to give another shout out to the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle who keep us on the air. They'll be open early this weekend, 10 a.m. You got the Celtic match. You got all the Premier League matches. Perfect time to go down and watch on the 100-inch big screen and see your favorite team play. So thanks again to the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, Maryland's premier place for live sports and live music, for keeping us on the airwaves. Switching gears a little bit, wanted to give you my bad. We have a little bit of an injury crisis over at Barcelona and Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
For Liverpool, Naby Keita, Sadio Mane, and Mo Salah all went down with injuries.
All went down.
National break.
Yeah.
Barcelona has an El Clasico coming up in about 10 days from tomorrow. And they're going to be with – right now, they're without Thomas Vermaelen and Samuel Umtiti, leaving Gerard Piqué and Clement Leggett as their only fit center backs.
Mm-hmm.
The international break has not been kind.
No, and you're looking – yeah, and even Arsenal, you know. Cech's been hurt because Koscielny went down. Ozil's injured now, and Sokratis from Greece has took a knock over the international break. So yeah, this one's been rough.
Yeah. So, but my favorite time period of the show, the one thing that I enjoy the most talking about every week is the ugly. When it gets really bad. Now you said Germany was your bad. Germany was going to be my ugly. Let's talk about the fact that you have lost six games in a calendar year for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about a bad run. Down to 12th in the world. This is the first time that they may end the year outside of the top 10 since 2005.
Wow.
So that was going to be my ugly, but
yeah.
You stole it for your bad. So I will defer to you and let you give your ugly, because that was going to be mine, because it's ugly.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? I it is ugly for Germany. And it's, you know, this happened when Germany had some struggles before. I think back in the latter part, I think the late 90s, they were struggling a bit. And they put together a new plan and won a World Cup within 10 years. And I got a feeling like this is probably what Germany is going to do again.
The last time was 04, 05, 06.
Right.
And that ushered in the Jurgen Klinsmann and the new
right.
plan, and they revitalized the system, and that's how they got out of that.
Yeah, and I could see, but you know, it's Germany and soccer. It's just what they do. It's just what they do. My ugly though was you know, the U.S. Game, but I kind of touched on that already, and so, but I have another kind of ugly, something that bugs me a little bit, and. We were talking about the U.S. women earlier, and all over what's trending online, what's trended online for the past week is Carly Lloyd kicking a 45-yard field goal for NFL football. And it was getting this press, like this was something that was really amazing. And as someone who has played ball for a long time, played soccer for a long time, and has played with women on co-ed teams for a long time, I can think of four of my friends that are women that could do this too. And I took this, it annoyed me because I went, why are you surprised that a professional athlete in the caliber of Carly Lloyd can kick a football 45 yards?
I'd be more surprised if she could only
exactly
45
and
yards.
If you saw the kicks, that kick was good from 10 more yards away. Now, if you ever watch like professional football players who aren't kickers kick a football, it's laughable. It really is. So I guess in their eyes, they're thinking that, wow, kicking a football is hard. Look at this female do it. And I just shook my head and said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Carly Lloyd could do that 100 times in a row, and so could every other woman on the U.S. team. And I have a friend who played striker with me on a co-ed team, and she would easily send the ball on crosses, or if she went to track back long ball, she'd send them half the field with just a chip shot. So I'm sorry, it's not impressive. And can we stop acting like just because Carly Lloyd is a woman that this is somehow impressive? Because it's not. What would be impressive is let her try from 65 yards, because you know what? She might be pretty close to making that too. Then I guess you could say that's really impressive bit. But I found that was quite disrespectful to women, especially women soccer players, that this is somehow trending. I don't know. That just bothered me. I felt like that was ugly this week.
So, got about 20 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Let me get into some ugly. I got to start off with the MLS awards, which were released today. I'm all in favor of postseason awards. Mm-hmm. I think it's great when we talk about Coach of the Year and MVP and stuff like that. I looked at the MLS awards. The ballot was announced today. Voting starts today and runs until the 28th. The MLS award nominations are kind of like Oprah Winfrey giving out cars. You get a nomination. You get a nomination. Everybody's getting nominations. How in the world do you have 41 players nominated for MVP, including such luminaries as Dom Dwyer, who has scored 12 goals for bottom of the Eastern Conference, Orlando City FC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Danny Hosen, who has scored 12 goals for the worst team in the MLS. 41 players nominated for MVP. You think that's bad? 17 of 23 coaches were nominated for Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
21 of the 23 starting goalkeepers in MLS are on the ballot for goalkeeper of the year.
For goalkeeper of the year. Yeah.
So, let's go talk about the MVP. There were two nominees for MVP from San Jose who were the worst team in MLS. I know that by MVP, we can argue whether it's you got to be the best team player on the best team,
right?
Or whether it's the best or whether it's the best all around player.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly feel though that you can't be the best player on the worst team in the league and still be MVP, because if you were MVP, y'all wouldn't be the worst team in the league.
No. Also, as I said earlier in the show, I don't follow MLS as closely as I follow some other leagues, but I am a fan of a team. I am, especially recently, I've been watching it a lot more. And I'm looking at this list for MLS MVP, MLS Defender of the Year, and I don't recognize some of these players. And you're up for Most Valuable Player, and I don't even recognize your name.
I don't recognize. How about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, nominated for MVP, Comeback Player of the Year, Newcomer of the Year.
Newcomer of the Year, yeah.
What he wasn't nominated for was Rookie of the Year.
Right, and I'm surprised he wasn't nominated for Rookie of the Year because this is his first year in the league. And I would figure out, it's like MLS is going to find a way to get Zlatan to show up at this award show. They're going to find a way to get him to go. And they just, this is nominating for everything.
Mark McKenzie from the Philadelphia Union was nominated for Rookie of the Year. And the funny thing is, I can't actually remember seeing him play for the Philadelphia Union.
You know, and Wayne Rooney for MVP. I mean, yes, Wayne Rooney has come in and he's played well for a team, but you can't be MVP when you didn't arrive till July 14th. I'm sorry. You can't
well,
be.
I'm actually more in favor of Wayne Rooney being nominated for MVP because, yes, he didn't arrive until June. But look at how the team has played since he arrived.
Right, clearly, but he didn't play until July.
Yeah, he played in July, and you look how they've played since he got there.
Right.
And the change in how that has happened, I can truck with that. I can't truck with Josmir Yutan
of Orlando City.
Orlando City, who's
right.
played for the whole entire season, being nominated for MVP when y'all are the second worst team in the league.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Wayne Rooney came into a team that was bottom of the Eastern Conference in July and has gotten them into the playoffs. That is MVP caliber for me.
Yeah, it's caliber. But
12 goals, and I'm saying, like, I can truck with him being in the discussion. You're Dom
right,
Dwyer
in the
discussion. Scored 12 goals for Orlando City the whole entire year. And you're up, and you're the second worst team in the league, and you're up for MVP. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. That. Well, what do you think? What's the rationale behind this? Like, what's the point? Because this looks like. I mean, you have people that probably like. If you weren't an all-star, should you be nominated for MVP? Do you know what I mean? It seems like this is more of one of those situations where I believe baseball used to do this, where every team had to have at least one representative on the all-star team. So you had players who were making all-star teams that probably shouldn't have, but you just had to have your representative. This is almost more akin to that than it is to an actual nominations for an actual most valuable player. I mean, I thought that the number was usually like 3 to 5 players, not 40.
I was thinking 10. I don't understand how you can have 17 of 23 coaches nominated for Coach of the Year. I don't
yeah.
know. Like,
they nominated. They have coaches nominated whose teams are who've been out of playoff hunt. I mean, I think Orlando's coach is nominated
Orlando's coach, but Greg Vanney, who has done less with more, considering what he had this season. Greg Vanney's up for Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that his name is even on the ballot discounts it for whoever wins. Like
Toronto's tanked this year.
How do you even discern of thinking about nominating him?
Mm-hmm.
I think you limit it to 5-10 at most. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, there are a couple of great goalkeepers. I can think off the top of my head. I think, you know, Andre Blake has had a phenomenal season. Zach Steffen's had a phenomenal season. But mm-hmm. you're telling me only 2 goalkeepers in the entire league are not worthy of consideration for goalkeeper of the year?
Right.
Yeah.
No,
that is just ugly in its ridiculousness.
When is the award presentation?
After the MLS Cup Finals in December.
Okay.
And voting closes on the 28th, the last day of the season. We already know that most of this is fictitious. You know, I already know, for instance, that Yosef Martinez almost has to be MV goal scoring record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're probably looking at a Zach Steffen, and Andre Blake has already won it a couple of times as the goalkeeper of the year. You know, you look at the coach, Oscar Perea from FC Dallas, probably going to win high in the running coach of the year. You know, Zlatan got to be newcomer of the year if it's not Wayne Rooney. These things are pretty settled.
Right.
But the fact that we have to go through this ridiculous voting process with this ballot that includes the cast of Friends is kind of laughable to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I'm pretty sure the only person who wasn't nominated for MVP was Pelé.
And you know what? If they thought that would bring more eyes to the league, they would try.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, oh, we did this. Look at all the names.
Right.
Everybody is involved. And it changes it from an actual legit MVP conversation to a participation award.
Right.
And I'm not cool with that.
Yeah,
so that was definitely high on my running for the week. Ugly for the running week.
It doesn't get
also
much uglier than that.
ugly for running for the ugly of the week was ESPN's game choice for the International Week. Yesterday, I decided I really wanted to tune in and watch England play Spain. ESPN has most of the European rights, and I really wanted to tune in and watch England play Spain. I got Switzerland, Ireland. Today, I had a choice between Belgium and the Netherlands and Germany and France, and I got Ukraine and Czech Republic.
Dang.
Is ESPN consciously going out and saying to soccer fans, forget y'all. We would rather make you watch Around the Horn and put Ukraine and Czech Republic on ESPN News than show a legitimate soccer game.
Yeah.
Their choice of games to put on was forcing people to go to the ESPN Plus and try and pay $60 a year to watch legitimate football games. How do you not put on Germany-France? How do you not put on Belgium-Netherlands? If I'm an advertiser who is buying time during a soccer game for ESPN, I'm flabbergasted right now. Flabbergasted at their game choice. Because that was utterly ridiculous. I can understand that you have this property, but you're going to legitimately go out of your way to choose a game that pretty much no one wants to see over something that any average soccer fan can tell you will be compelling. I'm pretty sure that even the fans in both the Ukraine and the Czech Republic really wanted to see Germany play France.
Absolutely. The whole thing stinks to me. They know that soccer fans really, really live for these big games, especially some of these big international games. And to say that, you know what, we support the game, but we're going to put on the games that we know are going to get much lower viewership with the intention that you are going to pay for our soccer plan. You're going to pay for this service that, and even then, that service is going to include things that you probably really don't want to watch, like the national championships of beer pong and cornhole, which were on instead of international games on a few times with ESPN. So it is really it's disrespectful and sad, and it's also soccer fans are going to pay. Soccer fans over here are going to pay.
This is the first time that I really, as a soccer fan, felt targeted to pay extra money to see something that I have for years been able to see for free.
Right.
And that bothers me.
Right.
Because it's not only do I have to have my cable subscription, I have to have all these ancillary subscriptions to watch it. I can understand you not wanting to put on Manchester United Young Boys in the Champions League. How you would opt out of England, Spain on ESPN in favor of Iceland and Switzerland.
Right.
Baffles me.
Yeah, it's baffling.
If I am a fan, if I am a pub owner who has to pay additional for this, I am flaming hot Cheeto.
Absolutely.
Yelling at the screen mad that I have to pay for a subscription for some. This is just beyond.
Right. And those were happy hour games. Those are games that people can come and watch and then hang out for a while, get some dinner. You know, that's one thing that's great about it too. These games are on. These games are on during the day.
Yes.
And,
so
and I'm saying it doesn't cloud ESPN's big money making viewing, which happens, of course, with the big major sports in the United States that occur in the evening. These games are on at two o'clock in the afternoon. I'm sorry. You can delay around the horn.
Or do you have 17 networks?
And you got 17 networks. That's right.
You had to put on reruns of College Football Weekly on ESPN News? Seriously, my dude, you could show this?
Show this, yeah. You show this. Come on.
You had four network packages, and you couldn't conceive of on one putting this on?
Yeah. No, it doesn't get much worse than that. It doesn't
I'm calling the entire Monty on that one.
Yeah.
So well, that I'm is so, my That is my rant for the week.
Yeah, and I could not agree with that rant more, because I was equally as upset when NBC purchased the Premier League rights and they were showing games on their affiliate of networks. I believe they have 10, 12 networks, and they were showing games on those networks, especially the 10 o'clock games, the mid-morning games. They were putting those on. And then they started the little NBC Gold thing, and now all of a sudden you have to pay to watch those games now. So it's like they gave you a taste and then they took it away. And, you know, they did the typical street dealer move where it give you a taste until you want it, and then now they're going to charge you for it. And it's just it's really – you're nickel and diming us enough to be able to just watch some television, and then to ESPN that's got 8 networks, to NBC that's got 12 networks. You can give up a couple of networks because you purchased the rights to these games. These are bringing in advertisements. These are actually getting good ratings. And not every game has to be Chelsea versus Manchester City for people to want to watch it. So I love the rant. I love the rant. I love it. It's perfect.
Yeah, that this is my parting shot for the week. Shame on you, ESPN. Shame.
Shame on you.
Right, right. Finger of righteous indignation wagging at your general direction at this moment for that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as we close out the show, your parting thoughts for the week.
Party thoughts for the week is the Clásico may be next week, but Barcelona's got a big, big game on Saturday. Barcelona's playing top of the table, Sevilla at home. And as you mentioned earlier, Barcelona's kind of beat up. So Sevilla, this is a chance for you to go out there and really say, we are going to compete for the La Liga title this year, to break that stranglehold of Barcelona and the Madrid team. So go Sevilla.
Yeah, not going to happen. In the words of Demi Lovato, sorry, not sorry. And I never thought
but
that
my
I would
delivery
do that.
Was great. My delivery was great.
Your delivery was great, but your point was wrong.
It doesn't
sorry.
Matter. I can fire up Sevilla fans all I want, man.
Yeah, I'll catch the L on that one. I've wagged my finger of righteous indignation and planted it firmly in the ground against ESPN. As I tune out to now watch Peru and U.S. Once again, I want to give a big thank you to the fine folks down at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle. Come down and join us this weekend. Watch some soccer. We'll have all the Premier League matches on. Catch up with some Celtic as they try and climb back up the top of the table in the Scottish Premier League. You want to come down in the afternoon on Sunday and watch some NFL football. That's your place to do it. 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. Some great bands coming up Friday and Saturday evenings. Once again, a big thank you to you, Stead, for your participation in this weekly.
Thank you to you, Mike.
Kerfuffle. Yes. As always, thank you to producer Paul for keeping us running and keeping us on the airways, even when we don't seem to want to cooperate. I am Mike. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show, and we are going to coast off into another lovely, albeit slightly chilly, DC weekend.
All right. Have a great weekend. Have a great week, everybody.
Hey, we did good this week. We'll try and do better next week.
All right. Take care.
Mike, you're on.
Well, I've been on.
I know. I have not. I found out that when I end the episode, we are not able to chat across the mic like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say another good show.
Yeah, we had a little bit of problems this week, but we got through them.
It seems to be the connection. With the mic. Huh?
Well, I'm not sure what that one was because it looked like my mic went dead.
It said that you dropped out a couple times. I pulled you back in again as soon as you redialed.
Yeah, I've never had that happen with the Direct Connect. So I'm not 100% sure what that is. So I'm going to chalk this week up to a bit of an aberration. And we'll move forward because I think the fundamental plan that we have in place right now with doing the direct connect and the way that we're doing things right now works out perfectly. We'll adjust fire with Stead when he can't hear me because it seems to be me that tends to drop out more than him.
Yeah.
He just keeps going and doing what he does. And then when he can hear me and I jump back in, I'll just pick it up from the point where we're at and we'll move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like we don't even know that that happened. So he's not checking on me. We communicated effectively.
I was going to say it has to be equipment because if you're wearing...
I don't know what it was with the computer tonight. I don't. But it happens.
Typically, the connection wears out between the headset / microphone and the device, which in this case is a PC laptop. And it's just that over the years, from moving back and forth, it loses its tightness and therefore breaks connection easy, or there's crackle in there.
Yeah, but I've had this headset for 3 weeks. Now, if it's the headset and we have this same problem next week, then the solution is simple. I just get another headset. If we don't, if I don't, then, you know, we can just say, look, I had a bad connection. It was a bad week. There was atmospheric interference. With technology over distance like this, you don't know what you're dealing with.
Well, when you're on with Frank or Tommy G, do you get the same thing? Because it's still through the same venue.
Yeah, but when I'm on with Frank and Tommy G, I do it strictly from my cell phone.
Oh, I see.
When I'm on with Frank and Tommy G, I'm not as worried about the connectivity, and I don't have the same problems. But if I was doing it from my cell phone, and when I'm doing it with Frank and Tommy G, I'm also doing it at a different time. We have, and this is something that we should look at. Our problems always seem to exist between 8 and 8:30. Now, I don't know. Every time we have done the show, we have never had a problem after 8:30. I don't know if we want to consider pushing the show back to 8:30. Because apparently that's a less traffic area. Because the other thing that we've talked about is, and I think we really should consider this, is going to an hour and a half.
Well, it's not a bandwidth issue. There's a couple of ways to look at this when you understand what's going on with the tech side of it. The bandwidth, which is the amount of pipe allocated to deliver our audio and have our connections, is good enough. We're not dropping each other, and we're not closing up. Like, there's no freeze. There's different things that occur with the protocols on, you know, the software. And if there's not enough bandwidth from the internet provider, from the ISP, to support this platform, then we choke out, and that has not happened. So there's always been plenty of pipe for us to deliver our message and have our shows. So that part is the most important, and that's fine. The second part is the way you're connecting into the show. The direct connect is a good it's the best that I've seen for us to be able to deliver the audio quality through this network than any other network. I do know of a guy that has moved off of Blog Talk Radio and onto a more expensive platform, which is approximately $400 to $800 per month just for airtime. Yeah, it's sky high. And he says supposedly the connections are better. You know, but he said that I started early on Blog Talk, and I'll tell you right now that they've come a long way. It's good. It's plugged in, it's working well, and it's where it should be. So he stepped up only because he's got his show has been developed there for 5 years where he has enough of a base to justify, you know. So the last thing it is either the device, the PC or the cell phone or whatever you're using, or the headset, like the microphone. So that's the first place I would think to look. Because I see no disturbance, no interference. It's not that I have like strict audio screens that show squiggly lines and graphs moving and data, you know, ones and zeros flowing across the screen. I don't see that type of technology. I simply see that you're connected or not connected. And, you know, even when you're having problems, you're still lit up. Your mic is hot and it's still working. I hear crackle. I've heard it before the show went live. And also, you know, when you drop out, when your red light goes out, I'm looking to bring you back in. And then, you know, immediately there's a little pop-up that says, you know, mic has dropped off, that type of thing. And then, you know, I just have to wait for you to dial back in and get reconnected. But now, I don't know if there's a thing between the 8 and 8:30, like you're saying. That's an interesting thought. I do know that it has happened after 8:30, but I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what you're doing. Sometimes people move around. Sometimes people turn their heads. Sometimes people are looking at.
I'm pretty static. I'm pretty static for this.
Yeah, I would admit I admire the fact that you have all this data, information, and details that you're inside your head. You're not referring to a piece of paper over here or a book over there or some other source. You know, you've got it all upstairs, which is admirable.
Oh, no, I don't have it all upstairs. I do have it written down. I have, like, if you saw what my setup on my coffee table is right now, I've got, like, the iPad right here, and I've got my show notes. So my movement is limited, but I do stuff that we have a couple of things as we go forward and we grow. We're going to count this up as an aberration, and we'll get back at it next week. The two things that I do want to pay attention to are, A, how it goes the next couple of weeks, because I think this may just be a one-off. I've never had a problem with the Direct Connect in the previous 3 weeks that we've been doing it.
Yeah.
This was an odd one. And let's just kind of like that, like the week that you just couldn't sign in. And we'll rally around it, and we'll get back at it next week.
I know what happened on that, by the way. I went back, I dug it out, and I know what happened and why that was such a problem.
All right. Like we said, we're still growing. I want to get these episodes up on iTunes because even with the mistakes, I still think it's listenable.
That's going to start tomorrow. I am going into 2 weeks of early voting starting next week. And that's going to be a 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. event, and I need to be there 30 minutes before, and I'm usually going to stay 30 minutes after. So it's going to be a 13-hour grind every other day, every other odd day on the calendar, all the way up to the 4th of November when we break, and then I do the general election in November 6th. So I want to be able to connect with the technical people over at Blog Talk Radio to get a lot of these issues addressed tomorrow.
All right. And if you have the ability to edit out the show, I think if it's still recording us, can you edit out this conversation that we're having right now because nobody wants to hear it?
Exactly. So, you know, but it's all part of behind the scenes and it's part of the curve. Otherwise,
MP3 – Do you have access to get this as an MP3?
I should. As a matter of fact, it is archived, so you should be able to just pull it down.
All right.
It is archived. I'll find out more tomorrow.
All right. Let me know. Find out whether we can have these as MP3s and when we can have them and how we get these uploaded to iTunes, and let me know, because if we can get an MP3, I have another distribution outlet. So if you could, for instance, we can record on Monday and you can give me an MP3 on Tuesday, I can have it on a different distribution channel Tuesday evening.
Blog Talk processes right away, so I don't know what they do when they process, but that's a good conversation to have with those folks. So
yeah, those are the two things. But the number one is I need this on iTunes ASAP.
Okay.
All right. And we need to get that uploaded, because this is the whole entire point of doing this, is to get
okay.
it on iTunes and have it listened to. All right?
And, I think so, too.
Are you on the air with the Eagles show on Thursday?
I am not, because I have to do setup at the precinct. And being
right.
a tech guy, everything that plugs in is under my purview. So I have inspector. I have all the inspector devices. I have the actual ballot tabulators. I have the disability machines. Everything that lights up or plugs in is me. So I've got a lot of work to do Thursday. They set up that early because they want to test the equipment. Florida is very, especially Hillsborough County here in Tampa, very, 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 very strict on ballot security and voting security. There's a number of measures that they go through on a lot of this stuff. So they called me in to be a tech guy pretty quick after, you know, they found that I was in that area. I worked in that space. So anyway, that's that. But I'm working Thursday, so the short answer is no, I won't do a show Thursday.
All right. Next time you're on, I was going to try and get on. I was trying to get on with you tonight.
I cut it early. I needed to break off.
I came in right as you were cutting it off, and I heard you do it. But I was trying to give you a couple of minutes on the Eagles show. So,
yeah.
A, let us know whether Monday or Tuesday next week, because you've got the – and I'm not looking at a calendar, so I don't know. But whatever day works for you next – yeah, what day is it? What one is going to work for you, Monday or Tuesday?
Let's see. Monday.
Monday, because so we'll do that.
Yeah, so Tuesday the 23rd and every other day ending in an odd number is my
right,
painful
so,
day.
All right, I'll tell Stead we have to do Monday. Even if Stead can't, I'll do it on Monday, or I'll get somebody else to do it on Monday. That's not a problem. If you are for whatever reason, and I don't think you're going to do the Eagles show on Tuesday, let me know. And
mm-hmm.
I'll hop on with you for a couple of minutes and talk about the birds, okay?
I'm probably not going to be able to do it because I'm going to be in precinct till at least 7:30, and if it's slated to be from 7 to 8, there's no point in rushing home to do 20 minutes. You
all
know
right,
what I mean?
No,
it's,
no worries.
No,
look, just whenever you do the Eagles show, let me know, and I'll give you 15 minutes or something, and we'll talk about the birds like we did last week, okay?
Okay. Yeah, it was a short show tonight because they played so well against the Giants. You know, there was just
a few points to put
on the table. Hmm?
Yeah, but I'll help you out with that because I know how hard it is to talk by yourself for, oh, the U.S. just scored.
Ah, nice.
Sorry, I got distracted.
No, that's
I know
that's
how
okay.
hard it is. All right, so I'll talk to you next week. I'll put it out to Stead that we have to do Monday to accommodate your schedule. And we'll go at 8 on
Beautiful.
Monday. Right?
Okay.
And then probably in November, let's look to switch into about an hour and a half. Okay?
We could do that.
Yeah, I think we
sounds good, Mike.
All right. Talk to you later. Peace.
Thanks a lot. See you.